Yes, it's that time of the week where we talk all things pets, and I'm joined by Cheryl Shaw and Dr. David Tabbert. Hello.
G'day.
Good afternoon.
Nice to see you now. Yeah. Cheryl, we'll start with you. You've got a little paw pin today, so I'm assuming we're talking about animal paws.
We are. We're going to be talking about dog paws and about the hair that sometimes needs to have attention.
Oh, that's a great one. Mm. What about you, David?
An obscure form of heart disease.
Ooh.
But it's not so obscure because we've seen two patients with this condition just this week in our hospital.
So, all right.
We'd touch on that.
And we've got Fiona from Soldiers Point on the line. Hi, Fiona.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. You've got an 11-year-old dog with teeth issues.
Yeah, we do. Well, we think his back molar might not be too good, but we're not sure because he's still eating and everything. He's still happy, and so we're not sure. We don't want to take it out if it's unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, much like ourselves, of course, their teeth are going to be prone to injury or infection, and that could be a reason why this... Is it the whole tooth itself that appears brown, or...?
Yeah, but we just kind of thought was it old age, maybe?
But it's just the one tooth, yeah?
Yeah, just at the back. I mean, his teeth are pretty good, but we kind of thought, well, if it was really sore, he wouldn't be eating, but he's fine.
Well, the thing about dogs is it takes a lot to put them off their food. And when it comes to having a sore mouth, they'll still keep eating. They just move the food to the other side. So they'll try and protect it. And, you know, if he stopped eating completely, then he's going to be in a situation where he's going to go downhill very quickly. So the kind of the survival drive and from a behaviour is that he needs to eat.
Yeah.
But he'll just move the food around. He'll avoid... things that are going to put pressure on the tooth. It can be incredibly painful, but they don't show it because he doesn't walk around holding his jaw or asking for Panadol or anything like that. So, and oftentimes we do see different reasons why their teeth might have a brown tinge to them. But the ones we see that are really worrisome are the teeth that just go grey right through the whole tooth. And that's when the enamel and all the dentine, I should say, which is the living tissue in the tooth itself, the enamel is the outside, but the dentine is now dead. And so those teeth have to come out or have root canal therapy done. So the only way to really tell is that he needs to go into the vet, have an anaesthetic, and they can do an X-ray of his jaw and have a look at the tooth root and evaluate it that way. But very often, you know, we'll take those teeth out and the dog feels $1 million and runs around and happy to start eating again once the stitches heal up and so on. And he'll just be a much happier dog for that. And at the same time, get the rest of the teeth checked. They can look out for signs of, you know, impending infection or problems elsewhere so that we can prevent him having problems like this in the future.
Yeah. And what happens if we don't get it taken out? Well, is there a chance of like infection and stuff?
Yeah, and particularly, is it an upper molar or lower jaw?
It's lower.
Lower. Okay. So one of the things we've seen is, and it occurs more commonly in the upper jaw, but I have seen it in the lower jaw, is if there's an infection, that produces pus. Now, the enamel on a tooth is harder than the bone. Okay. So the pus isn't going to go up through the tooth itself. It's going to go down through the bone. Yeah. And then what you end up, they'll get a developing sore that's discharging some pus on the bottom of the jaw.
Right.
This is bad, bad news when you see this, okay?
Okay.
Sometimes we'll see it in dogs where it's in the upper jaw and it actually will pop out just in front or below the eye. And people go, oh, they've got a sore eye, and they come in and we go, no, that's his tooth. And then you
lift
back the lip and sure enough, it's usually a fractured tooth or it's very obvious that it's infected. So in all those circumstances, we want to remove that diseased tooth because then they'll develop osteomyelitis, which is an infection in the bone.
Right.
And in the lower jaw, this is especially problematic because it weakens the jaw and then there's a risk of fracture.
Oh, okay.
And right. I have seen dogs where the diseased tooth has been left too long and they actually have fractured the jaw.
Oh, okay.
So it kind of goes from bad to worse.
Yeah, right, so, okay.
But
all right.
It's definitely fixable when you're noticing that problem there. Because, you know, removing that tooth, treatment with antibiotics and so on, pain medication, he's going to feel heaps better.
Yeah, sure. All right. Okay.
Well, good luck, Fiona.
That's my question. Thank you so much for your help.
No worries. See ya.
Thank you. We've got another dog question here. Susan from Salamander Bay. Hi, Susan.
Hello. How are you?
Good, thank you. You've got two very fussy dogs who won't eat anything.
Very, very fussy.
How old are your dogs, Susan?
One's 4 and one's 10 months.
Oh, and they're both fussy.
Yes.
Oh, dear. And
I must be doing something wrong.
Well, maybe. And how long have they been fussy for? Let's talk about the 4-year-old.
The 4-year-old, he's always been fussy. So when we first got him, we got him as sort of probably a 12-week-old puppy.
Yes.
And he was being fed dry food when he was, puppy food. So we brought him home and tried that, and he would go for days without eating anything. Sorry, I'm on the road.
Right. Yep.
And so he would go days without eating anything, and then he might take a couple of mouthfuls. And so I varied that. I got lots of other things. I went to dog rolls. I went to the pet shop in Newcastle and got him specially made food. In the end, I feed him lamb steaks. That's the only thing that he will eat.
Mm. And do either of the dogs, mainly focusing on the 4-year-old, have any other health problems, diarrhea, vomiting, skin problems, anything like that? No? Okay. I remember a time, and Cheryl's reminded me by bringing in an old, very old business card of mine from 1998, believe it or not. I remember this time and seeing dogs that owners told me this kind of story, and I'd say, well, don't be silly, of course, because dogs, you know, everybody knows dogs will just eat anything.
Yeah, well, I would love a dog like that.
Well, now I've got a dog very similar to what you're describing, who is very fussy, and her sister eats everything.
So
I've got this contrast, whereas I think you've got probably the scenario where the younger dog has learned a certain behaviour from the older dog.
From the older one.
But I have a lot more sympathy for your situation now that I've been through this myself. And our solution was very similar to yours, and I can't say that we've solved it. And that is, we're going to try every other food on the planet and see what food they're attracted to, and in particular, what combination. This is not an approach that I advocate for, and apologies to my wife because she puts in a lot of work to get the dogs to eat. But the reason I say I don't advocate for it is because at the end of this journey of finding these foods like you just described, and it's like they only eat lamb steak, and I'm sure it has to be trimmed a certain way.
It's not fussy. It does have to be cut in the right size pieces, yes.
And it just, I go back, that's why I asked the question about health. Okay, because at some point it's like, well, if there's no health problems and they're maintaining body weight and exercise and energy and no diarrhea in particular, that's the main one I want to make sure, I kind of go, well, they don't eat.
Mm. Yeah.
And then when they're hungry, they'll eat.
Yeah. We're not a big treat people. They do get treats when we're training, but only the little one who is being trained. And the big one won't take them anyway.
Okay.
He's really not interested. He will occasionally have a yogurt drop if I give him one, but very, very rarely.
There we go. There's something.
Very fussy. He is very, very, very fussy. Yes.
Well, it makes things a little bit easier when it comes dinner time that he hasn't filled up on anything else. But I think we need to pare it back a bit and just have a close look at the volume that you're giving probably only feed half the food that you would normally. And then just see how they go with that one.
Yeah.
Okay, good luck with Susan.
Thank you. I've got to look on the bright side, don't I?
Yes, that's right. Of course.
Let us know how you go.
Thank you so much.
This is Pet Chat. We are going to our website, 2NURFM.com.au, and we're checking out our pets of the week. And today we've got Ollie and Bonnie. We're going to start with Ollie.
Mm. Now, Ollie, Amanda, is described as a Labrador cross Staffy.
Mm.
I think we might be better describing as a Staffy cross Labrador.
Right. What's the difference?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure how much Labrador is getting a look in there. Maybe the colour.
Maybe more in the personality.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. No, not saying there's any problems with Staffy personalities.
No, not at all.
Very affectionate. But so are Labradors.
Yes.
All the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then basically it's a great dog.
Well, who just loves cuddles.
That's
apparently.
Right. Yes, he's gentle, affectionate.
True to nature.
Kind kind of dog who presses in close for cuddles, believes wholeheartedly that he belongs on the couch and has an endless supply of love to give.
Well, he might need a little bit of training then if he believes that he needs to be on the couch. Yeah.
Right. Unless you're somebody that likes to be on the couch with him.
Well, yeah, by invitation though.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yeah, fair call.
I think we need to make sure that that's something. So, but that's kind of the same with any dog that you adopt or purchase or whatever you bring into your family, into your home. There's always going to be that period of time where you need to be able to train them and work with them, both for their own discipline, but also for how the household works.
Mm.
But yeah, and interestingly, I love this bit that he loves water, splashing and just being around water. So maybe that's the Labrador.
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be. It says Ollie is best suited to a home as an only dog, requires daily exercise, mental stimulation and ongoing training, would thrive in a home where he is included as part of the family.
Sounds good.
There you go.
Be on that.
Yeah, you can check out Ollie on our website. Oh, and also loves toys, balls and playful moments. So there you go. Most dogs love balls, don't they?
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, next we've got Bonnie. Bonnie is a three-year-old, beautiful tortoiseshell back with white belly and feet. She's a cat.
Bonnie's picture. So for anyone listening, go and have a look at the website, because if you don't fall in love with Bonnie straight away, she's got the goods.
She's got beautiful green eyes.
I'm just telling
her,
she's got the goods.
Beautiful. She's got the...
She's very photogenic.
I think she is.
Very photogenic.
She is. Well, dogs talk about dogs with balls. Bonnie is obsessed with balls, all shapes, all sizes. She'll play with them for hours, so she can entertain herself, which is great.
Oh, I love that about cats that do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just they're playful.
Do their own thing.
I don't mind cats that just lie around as well. They're kind of funny. But yeah. Cats that want to play, I think, is always good as well. And the interesting thing for Bonnie is that she's been in households with dogs. She's great with dogs.
Mm. And she is 3 years old.
I'm not sure all the dogs would be great with her.
Oh, no, probably not. But she's all right.
So,
well, she came into care heavily pregnant, and she devoted herself to her kittens until they were all adopted to loving family. So now it's her turn.
Well, no more kittens.
No more kittens for Bonnie.
She's been de-sexed. She's vaccinated, microchipped,
yep.
All ready to go.
Okay, so if you'd like to check out Bonnie or you'd like to check out Ollie, you can head to our website, 2NURFM.com.au. This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM, and David, we're going to talk about obscure heart disease.
So the particular disease I wanted to talk about was pericardial effusion, and the reason I wanted to talk about it is because we've had two patients this week with this condition. Now, you might think, well, that doesn't sound that obscure. It actually doesn't come around that frequently. So probably we would see one every couple of months.
Dogs generally. Or cats? Or?
It can occur in both species. Actually, it can also occur in cows, and probably it can occur in horses, but I can't speak to that.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen it in cows. The cause in cattle is totally different. It's almost always related to them picking up a piece of wire and eating it, and then it gets into the stomach and the wire pushes forward and it gets into the heart, right? But we don't see that with dogs.
Right.
Okay. Now, dogs and cats, they can get infections in the pericardial sac, but the conditions that I wanted to talk about are a little more obscure. Now, I should just explain the anatomy very quickly. So your heart's inside your chest, pumping away, which means it's moving all the time. And to prevent it sticking to other organs like the lungs, it's surrounded by a fibrous sac. All right, and inside the sac is a very small amount of liquid, fluid that is actually going to lubricate it so that it can move and it's not going to stick to anything and it's not going to get overheated and so on. But if you put more fluid into that space between the heart and that sac, then eventually that pressure of that fluid will actually compress the heart and stop it from pumping.
Right.
Okay. And that's a condition we call cardiac tamponade, where it's pressing on it. And so what are the conditions that, you know, well, first of all, rather than what are the conditions, what does it look like from the outside? Because, you know, nobody's going to walk home and go, oh, I think my dog has a pericardial effusion. But what we tend to see is dogs will develop, and I'm going to say dogs mostly, even though I said it occurs in cats, we see it more commonly in dogs. Dogs will become more lethargic. And interestingly enough, because they are used to having a little bit of fluid in there, they can have a little bit more and it does nothing. All right. So then it can build up. But then at some point, they just get that extra half a mil of fluid in there and suddenly their heart won't work. So they can go from walking around fine. Maybe they're a bit tired. Don't, you know, they look a bit lethargic. Their breathing will increase a little bit. The other thing that will happen is that if you can actually see their jugular vein in their neck, it'll start to pulse. So if we see a dog that is uncomfortable, tired, and then we look at their neck and there's a pulse, where veins shouldn't have pulses in them, then it almost certainly is going to be a pericardial effusion.
Right.
In that situation.
So everyone's going to be looking at their pet's necks.
Pet's necks, yeah. And then the way we diagnose it is actually we can put an ultrasound on and we'll be able to see the fluid surrounding the heart. So at that point, and what causes it? So the first thing is it could be hemorrhage related to maybe coagulation problems. So rat bait in dogs could cause bleeding into that space. I haven't seen that very often, but it's certainly possible. Other causes of hemorrhage associated with blood disorders also. Trauma. Well, I mentioned trauma associated with cattle. I have seen trauma causing problems in the pericardial sac. So dogs hit by cars can end up with problems there and they have some bleeding. The most common cause, though, is tumours. So there are a number of different types of tumours. The ones that really we worry about the most is hemangiosarcoma. And that tumour, it's a tumour of blood vessels. And one of the areas it can get into is in the heart, in particular at the top of the heart. And so they bleed into this space. And then we also see a cause of, it's called idiopathic, which means it's Latin for we don't know what's going on. I'm sure that's not the exact translation, but it's close. But idiopathic we see in many dogs, and then probably most of those dogs, it's just because we haven't actually got the correct sample to find, say, a tumour or something like that. However, in golden retrievers, are a breed who are known to get idiopathic pericardial effusion. And I remember seeing a couple of dogs with this way back. I mentioned about working back in West Wall's End back in 98. I saw some dogs back then from a litter that had this condition when they were about 2 years of age. And these dogs went on for ages with this condition. I've seen an English Bull Terrier with it. And the dog came in every 3 months and we drained the fluid out of its pericardial sac. And it went away and come back 3 months later when the fluid built up again. And it took 12 months before we found tumour cells. So it is possible that some of these dogs can actually have this condition for a while. But at some point, if you need to drain it. And so when they come in and they're collapsed and it can progress to cardiac arrest. And I do remember seeing a dog once that walked into our hospital. It was a Doberman. Walked into the hospital and the guy said, oh, he just wasn't well. and the other vets were looking after him. And I went into a consult. When I came out, they were doing CPR on him.
Wow.
Because he'd walked in and within 5 minutes had arrested. And without getting into too much detail, we were actually able to drain, because I kind of figured out straight away what was going on. And then we drained the fluid. And it turned out that dog had a tumour in his right side of his heart, which had bled into this space. So so there are a number of these causes, and ultimately what we want to do is diagnose it with ultrasound, scan for other disease, particularly in other organs, and then we have to put a catheter into the sac and drain that fluid, and we can get about a litre of fluid that sits around the heart. So
jeez.
And hopefully they can go home and come back in 3 months, we'll do it again.
Wow. Well, we've all learned a lot today, haven't we? Cheryl Shaw, Dr. David Tabrett, thank you so much.
Thanks,
we'll
Amanda.
Catch up with you next week for Pet Chat.
Thank you.
This is 2NURFM.